episode of Mainlining Movies, everybody. Today's not a traditional episode, as we are counting down 10 more moments from the top 75 scariest movie moments of all time. I'm your host, Heidi Ho, your Ho Hayden here. And with me, as always, is my amazing co-host, Nathaniel. Say hello. It's just Nathan. But still.
What's up, Hayden? thanks for the wonderful introduction. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. I've got like 7 cups of coffee and a Monster and a Red Bull inside me right now, so I'm ready to do this.
Oh, Lord. This may be maybe the most energetic show we've had so far.
Sounds, hopefully. Because I get tired around this time nowadays.
Yeah, for those of you who don't work with Hayden, you should just know that Monsters, Red Bull, whatever the energy drink is, when this kid has them, he is next level energetic, and things go pretty crazy. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm probably going to die by like the age of 30, but that's besides the point.
Don't say that. We haven't gotten rich yet.
Unfortunately, I've signed everything away to my girlfriend. So once we do get rich off of this, you only get half of it. She gets the other half.
That's fine. Half is good. Half is good. Hey, half rich is better than not rich at all.
Yeah, I would say half rich is better than no rich, but that doesn't make any sense. So
yeah, not rich. It's fine.
So should we put some of the extra stuff at the beginning of the episode or at the end like we had been doing? So at the end of the episode, we typically just talk for about 5 minutes or so about just whatever. Should we put that at the end still and just keep it there? Or do it at the beginning, get out of the way. That way at the very end, we just outro and stop. Like, this is something I've been playing with, and I need everybody to know that this is something I've been playing with and thinking about, and that it's a genuine conversation. So let us know what you'd rather have. We're going to keep it at the end today, because I've got a couple of things I just want to throw out there, just because why not? But I think we're kind of ready to get into this. So we're starting with 64 today, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We, for those of you who remember, we did the first, and we're counting down from 75, and we did 75 through 65, what, about 3-4 weeks ago, something like that, and we're going to the next 10, so we'll be doing 64 through 55 tonight.
Which is going to be just, hopefully, pretty darn good. We've got a lot of preparation into this, so hopefully it kind of ends up being pretty good.
I have to admit, I'm probably more prepared for this episode than any episode previously. So let's hope that this goes as well as I think it can.
All right, so I think 64 is actually one of mine, so we're just gonna go ahead and just jump right in.
Do it.
All right, so with number 64 coming in at the 64th scariest movie moment of all time, it's gonna be from a movie called The Girl on the Third Floor. This movie was released January 29th, 2020. It was written and directed by Travis Stevens. It stars CM Punk as Don. I believe it's Koch, K-O-C-H. I went to school with a girl named, I won't say her first name, but her last name was K-O-C-H, and it was Koch. It's not a joke. No one's trying to laugh here, but I believe his name is Don Koch. Sarah Brooks as Sarah Yates. Trissy Kelly Dunn. As Liz Koch, Tanya Kaye as the Nymph, Travis Degado as Milo Stone, and that's basically your main core cast there. The description of the movie is a man tries to renovate a dilapidated house for his growing family, only to learn that he has a lot more on his hands, as the house has other plans. So the moment I've chosen from this particular film is, and you've seen this film, Nathan, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you know the moment I'm talking about, and you've said that there are other moments in this film that you can consider scary, but when you really get down into the brass tacks of this film, this moment, for me, was the scariest moment in the film, because when you think about it, and I'll say it in just a second, but just think about it this way. How messed up do you have to be to just do this?
I guess you have to be pretty out of your mind.
See, so you understand.
I do understand.
So the moment I'm talking about is actually the scene where he believes that there is a ball and multiple balls in his skin. that are just rolling around. And so he takes a blade, a razor blade, I believe. It's one that's very similar that you'd find in a box cutter. I mean, he is renovating this place, so I'm assuming it is one that he got from a box cutter. And he just starts hacking away at his entire body. I'm talking from the tip of the wrist all the way up to his bicep, just trying to get his skin peeled open to get this ball out. Spoiler alert. And when you see this, at first, on a first watch, it doesn't seem that scary. Because you're just like, it's more gross. And you're like, I don't want to see that. That's, but when you really think about it, this house is doing something to him to a point where he is cutting his own flesh. Literally, what would you say, almost a centimeter deep, and it like is trying to peel it back.
Yeah, it's pretty deep. This
ball that he thinks is in his skin out.
It's
because the next scene that you see of him, when the wife, spoiler alert, comes to the house, his body is destroyed because he has cut himself so much. And might I add that this movie is seriously so good. It's one of those movies where even though the main star is a former wrestler, you cannot tell. Not once during this movie was I just sitting there like, that's CM Punk. Because he's my favorite wrestler of all time, right beside Johnny Gargano. And not once did this, I was like, that's CM Punk, man. I mean, I knew it was him, obviously. But not once was I like, hey, that's the guy. I love this guy. He just did that good of a job.
I agree. And honestly, I know we talked about this, you know, before, that I didn't know it was CM Punk when I first saw the preview for the movie until I saw his wonderful Pepsi tattoo.
That's make sure true. That you say TM. Or was it, is it trademark? Is it copyright?
I don't know. That one cola tattoo.
The cola with the red and blue, and there's maybe some white in there somewhere. Yeah.
So I don't remember what it's called, but yeah, that iconic tattoo.
One of the Jenners was in the commercial or something, I think, at one point, that they had to apologize for, I think.
We just went from dreams of getting rich to getting sued.
Yeah, pretty quick by two parties.
Within
a cola company and one of the Jenners.
Within 8 minutes. That's
That's pretty bad.
Hey, that is Hollywood style if I've ever seen it.
And if you're not getting sued in this world, in the U.S., while trying to become famous, are you famous? The answer is no.
That's a good question. That's a really good question. You're probably right. It's probably no, though.
And since you've seen this, we can converse about it. How did you feel about this whole scene?
As you mentioned, I don't, for me, it wasn't the scariest scene in the movie, but I do understand why the scene, it's definitely top three for the movie. I highly recommend it. The movie's on Netflix for those of you who don't know, but I think that CM Punk, like you said, he did a great job for his first acting role. My only complaint.
Well, he was a wrestler, so that's technically his first acting role. But
well, my only complaint about this movie, and it's not really anything that you can change because it's the way the movie was scripted, is he thought he was going to renovate this entire house with a power drill. That's basically all he had: a power drill, a box cutter, and I think he had a flashlight. Like, that was it. Renovate the house with nothing but that.
And spoiler alert, he may or may not have had a fleshlight, but that's besides the point.
Well,
you got to see the movie for yourself.
We won't go into that, but but you may be right.
I'm convinced. I'm convinced that's what it was the whole time, and that particular object was possessed, and that's what it was. Again, you have to see this movie to believe it. It's actually really, really good. I would put him up there in terms of performances by... That's an episode we got to do, best performances by wrestlers in movies. I would put him up there with Rowdy Roddy Piper in They Live.
Such a great movie.
That is a great movie, by the way.
It's
hands down one of the most quotable movies of all time.
It's possible, though, that you're one of only two other people that I know that have seen that movie.
Really?
Yeah, the first one being
That's
my dad.
Good film.
I'm not saying that there's not other people that have seen it. I'm just saying people that I know.
So. Well, people that you know need to start doing some viewing and watching. Everybody, right now, pause this episode. Go watch They Live or Don't Exist at All.
That's
and then come back. Don't just leave us hanging. Come back.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
But with that, we can go ahead and move on to number 63, which I believe you have number 63. So if you want to take it away, go ahead, run with it.
Yeah. So for number 63, we have a little film known as Hellraiser. This movie features one of the most iconic monsters. I guess he's a monster. He's more demon than monster. But Pinhead is one of the most used costumes for Halloween. It's one of the most used characters for Halloween, for scary parties. Everybody knows who Pinhead is. Everybody has their own version. And this movie was released September 18th, 1987. It was written and directed by Clive Barker. Good.
Yeah, I was going to say, can we just agree that Clive Barker has definitely got a fetish of some sort of BDSM because of all the leather outfits in this and just the way that everything was?
He absolutely has something going on.
It's very clear.
Hey, you know, maybe we could try to get him on the show. We could ask him if he wants to talk about it.
That leather fetish you got, what's going on there? Hella cool.
Interesting fact about Clive Barker, not the fetish part, but he wrote all of the Hellraiser and Candyman movies. There's
Candyman as well?
He wrote Candyman as well.
Wow.
Including one that apparently is coming out this year. Didn't know that until I was searching some stuff. Yeah. There's a new Candyman movie coming out sometime this year. So I'll be looking forward to that. Not sure if it's like a reboot or what.
I think it's a remake, maybe?
Could be.
I think it's a remake that is going to have reboot elements to it to make it like darker than it already was. I did know that this was coming. I didn't know that he had anything to do with it, though.
That's kind of nice that there's some originality to the film in the sense that we keep some of the same people that worked on it before.
Mm-hmm. So.
Now, a quick synopsis of the film is, in short, it's kind of a long, long story to get into it. Basically, teenage girl finds this mysterious box that was left behind by her uncle, and this box opens up a portal to a different dimension where these demonoid creatures called the Cenobites. They appear and basically drag you to hell, I guess, is for lack of a better term. And that's where we come into the scariest scene of the movie. It's the first time the Cenobites appear. Pinhead being the leader of the Cenobites. In this scene, there happens to be three others that appear. And so the scene starts out. The girl is in the hospital. She thinks she's imagined this whole thing until the doctor hands her the box. She plays with it once more, and all of a sudden the room starts to change, and these Cenobites appear, and they tell her that they're there to basically take her away because she opened the box. Now, she tries to get out of this by saying that her uncle, who had made a deal with the Cenobites, that he broke his deal and she could lead the Cenobites to her uncle if they'll, you know, they'll let her live. But this scene, it's probably the scariest scene in the movie as well. Although I can think of a couple scary. Now, you got to remember this movie is 1987, so there is some cheesy special effects. Although for the time being, it was pretty good. But there's definitely this element of scariness when you think about being dragged to hell by these hideous looking creatures, and it's the first time that you see them, and the Cenobites appear in all the Hellraiser movies, and they kind of changed throughout the evolution of the movies, but they're certainly something to be said about these original ones from the 1987 movie. Have you seen the movie, Hayden? Have you seen Hellraiser?
I actually have seen Hellraiser. I think the one I remember the most, though, is the second one. Which one introduces... Because you can correct me if I'm wrong. Have you seen more than just the first one?
Yeah, I think I've actually seen three or four of them.
Okay.
I don't remember. I remember there's one that takes place at a rave.
Yeah, I remember that one. The one I remember the most is, again, I don't believe he's in the first one. Whichever one introduces, I think it's Chatterteeth. Is that his name?
No, he's actually in the first one.
He is?
He is, yes.
Which is the... Sorry, my glasses hit my my microphone here. Which is the one that looks like he's got some stuff coming out of his ears then? I swear, there was one that was not the first one that was like in a future one. And that's the one I remember the most, unless I'm just on all kinds of weird different drugs at the moment.
It's possible that was the second one. I got to be honest right now, I can't remember. There's several different ones. Although
I didn't mean to kill your groove. I'm so sorry.
No, you're fine. Pinhead stays the same, obviously, because he's the leader. So Pinhead is the main Cenobite the whole time. I really don't remember. I think I know what you're talking about, but I don't really remember which movie it's from. So
I also remember the one with the guy got strung up in his bed and all of his skin was ripped off of him by the hooks and stuff.
Yeah, there's some pretty gruesome kill scenes in this, but even in the 1987 version, there's, you know, for a time where you didn't have the special effects that you have today, there was some pretty gruesome kill scenes in this movie. But it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to watch.
They are a lot of fun movies. I'm not going to lie. The newer ones, not so much, but they're pretty good.
I think anytime you take an original idea and just continue with it. I mean, we talked about it when we talked about Halloween, that, you know, they kind of kept just getting worse.
Yeah.
Because you take something great and you try to put your own spins on it and this and that. And sometimes it works, like with the Saw movies, where there were different writers and different directors, but it still somehow told a continuous story. I thought they did great with that. But you take a movie like this.
Saw should have been anthology films, not one continuous story.
Right. I guess I maybe agree with that, but I kind of like the... I know we're getting off topic here, but I kind of like the continuation. So by the end of it, you find out, you know, what everything that's really happened and how everything was connected. But yeah, it could have been an anthology. It would have worked too. But either way. Anyway, that's number 63, right? So do you want to go ahead and do number 62?
Yeah, all right. So if we're checking up and the ball's getting bounced to me, I guess I'm taking this next one up. So the next one actually comes from a movie of the title Midsommar. So it's not Midsummer, it's Midsommar. I believe, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Anybody out there who listens can correct me if I'm wrong. Especially those in the other countries, which, side tangent, shout out to those of us, those of you who are listening to us in Canada, Germany, and Ireland. Thank you very much. We did not miss that. We caught that the other day, and we're very, very happy that you guys are listening. Keep listening. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your dog, tell your cat, tell your grandma, tell your grandpa. Tell everybody. You know, tell your local leaders to talk about us and boast about us and just make us become international superstars so we can quit our jobs and not do anything but talk to you guys and give you guys enjoyment, because that's what you guys want. You guys want us to fulfill your need to be entertained and also taken away from reality for a little bit. So thank you guys very much for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And just kind of, I'll let you get back on your, I don't want to steal your thunder here, but when we were talking about it the other day and we found out that we had listeners in other countries, it really, not that we don't enjoy doing this show every day or every time that we do it, but it was just kind of a very, I don't know what the word, adrenaline rush. It was a good adrenaline rush, and a kind of a rejuvenating experience to find out that we've reached all the way to Germany and Ireland and even Canada. Because honestly, I don't know how these people found out about this show. We've told all our friends and family, and I know the word has been spread that way, but not really sure. And that's just kind of cool that a little show like ours, where we're just two guys having fun talking about movies, that the show reached that far.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And shout out to Washington State. Apart from our home state here of Indiana, you guys have the second most listeners. Try to beat this state out. Come on, Washington State. I know you can do this. All of you are in Seattle, which is crazy. It doesn't give us your exact address. It just tells us, like, you're in Seattle. That's it. It's not like, oh, this person so-and-so lives here, and this person. Like, all we see is a generalization of percentage, and then, like, hey, 100% of the listeners from this particular area are from this particular area. So 100% of our listeners in Washington State are from Seattle, so shout out to you guys. I'm assuming Seattle is much like Indiana, just depressing. So you need the entertainment. So tell all your friends, tell your family, tell your mom, tell your grandpa, tell your grandmother, tell your cat, tell your dog, tell their dog and cat friends, tell their local card playing place. I don't care. Just tell everybody.
I suppose this is probably a bad time to bring it up, and I hope this doesn't make us lose our Seattle listeners.
Don't do it. Okay, so Midsummer. I know where he's going with this, and we're not losing you Seattle listeners. Everybody, tell Pete Carroll he's the greatest football coach of all time. So, Midsummer. It was released in July 3rd, 2019. It was written and directed by Ari Aster. It stars Florence Pugh as Danny, Will Poulter as Mark. So for those of you who don't know Will Poulter by name, you might know him as the Eyebrows Kid. So there's that. Jack Rayner as Christian, William Jackson as Jash, and Wilhelm, I believe it is Blomgren, as Pell. I believe that's what they kept calling him. I could be wrong on the pronunciation of that. And then, so the description of the film is a couple travels to Sweden to visit their friend's rural hometown for its fabled Midsummer Festival. But what begins as an idyllic retreat quickly devolves into an increasingly violent and bizarre competition, that's right, at the hands of a pagan cult, who are the best kinds of cults, by the way, pagan cults. Or unless you want to be like the Jim Jones cult, then I guess you guys did some good for a while, but that's besides the point. Anyhow, the scene that we're going to be talking about today in Midsummer is actually the end of life jump scene that happens. That scene, it takes place not necessarily halfway through the film, but it does happen. Like, it's not near the beginning. It's in the middle. it's positioned to where you've had such eerie kind of calm this whole film, and you do notice things when they do get to his little rural hometown. You do notice some things like here and there and here and there, and they're very subtle, and you kind of pick up on it, and it's just eerie. Like, I don't want to keep using that word, but it's just very eerie, and it is very slight. And then out of nowhere, you get to this end of life jump. I don't know. I believe that's what it's called. If it's not called that, please correct me. But you get to this particular moment, and then that's when, not to use this word, but that's when shit just flies off the wall. And it just only goes downhill from here. Not the quality of the movie. It's obviously a very good film. But the characters' experiences in the rest of this film just go off the rails. Because you're not expecting this at all. It's one of those things where you're watching it, and I'm not putting this movie down at all, but you're almost bored at this rate. Like, it's one of those things that's very, very slow burning, and then this happens like that. Like, at the snap of a finger, it just happens. And at first, you are in kind of a little bit of a shock, but then, I don't want to spoil anything. I mean, granted, like, we are talking about these, and we are spoiling movies, but this is just a movie that I really need people to go just watch, because it's just that good. It's one of those movies where you watch it once and you're so disturbed, and you're just like, you know, I don't think I'll ever, I've watched it once. It was a good movie. I don't think I'll ever watch it again, but it really is good. Again, it's very slow burning up until this point, and it's very unexpected. I say until this point, like, yeah, and then it starts picking up, and then you get this moment. No, like, it is very, very slow burning, and then boom, like, it just happens out of nowhere. And when it does, there's a little bit added to it. So basically, I'll go ahead and just go into this explanation here. But basically, in this little village, when you get to be a certain age, you are required by the gods. And apparently, it is because who would want to live this kind of life past the age of, I believe, 70. You can look that up too. But once you hit 70, and it's your 70th birthday, you go to the top of this, not mountain, but it's a very, very big cliff. And you've had your final meal. It's a big old meal. Everybody's there celebrating it. And then you just jump off. And you smash your head on the rocks below you in front of everybody. And again, it's very, very weird, and it's very unexpected that you just become terrified at this point, because you don't know what's going on, because it's been such a slow burn up until now. The characters are all around. They're kind of talking, and he's like, oh, yeah, it's a celebration. And he's like, yeah, but they're going to go up here and they're going to celebrate something. So, like, you're just thinking that these two people that get on top of this cliff are going to be celebrating something. Because why not? Or, like, they are the eldest in the village. They're probably going to talk to people. You know, like they're going to have an announcement about life or whatever. It is a cult, so you're probably thinking this is their religious leader, what have you. And then they just jump. In the middle of the characters facing each other, not even looking what's going on, they're just talking and conversing, they just jump and happen to look over as soon as the lady smashes the ground. The guy jumps, the older man jumps, his head smashes a rock, and he's still conscious, and they just beat him to death. It is terrifying. I highly recommend anybody watch this film, like, ever. It is a must-watch, and that moment is just terrifying. And Nathan, you have correct, or have you seen just this scene?
I've seen a couple scenes, including this one. I have not watched the film all the way through, I have to be honest. There's actually a few films on our list where I've just seen the scene, and not the entire movie, because, well, there's like a lot of movies, in case people didn't know that. And I don't have time to watch every movie in the world, but I have seen a lot of movies. There's just a few on here that I have not.
Well, then, I guess it's on to number 61. Something that you have seen.
Something I have seen and actually just watched recently, and actually something that we just talked about but 2 weeks ago on our show when we talked about werewolves. The movie is Silver Bullet. Not going to go into a huge synopsis because I did it in the previous episode. But basically, a small town, it's Halloween, full moon, you get it, there's werewolves. And I mentioned before, Corey Haim, who plays Marty Coleslaw, and Gary Busey, who plays Crazy Uncle Red. It's really just Uncle Red. I added the crazy because it's Gary Busey. But they're really kind of the two main characters of the movie. Small town, werewolves. I already said that. But I just want to reiterate, werewolves. And the scariest scene, by the way, this movie was released October 11th, 1985. Directed by Daniel Attias, or Attias, not really sure how you pronounce his last name, and written by Stephen King, based on a short story by Stephen King as well, called Cycle of the Werewolf. Anyway, so the scene that I put on this list for number 61 is the bridge slash firework scene where Marty, Corey Haim as Marty, is on the bridge. You see the camera, you know, as the werewolf lurking in the trees, and Marty's just having a good old time, shooting off some fireworks that his good old Uncle Red got him, hanging out somewhere he shouldn't be. He should be at home in bed, and the werewolf decides that, well, hey, he's out here alone, I'm going to get him. So he sneaks up on the bridge, and you get this image of him being completely unaware of his surroundings, the werewolf coming at him, and then, you know, Marty finally notices that, hey, there's a werewolf coming at me, and he starts freaking out, and the only thing he can do is try to light this firework and shoot it at him. And he happens to shoot the firework at him, and it hits him in the eye. And thankfully he escapes. But this scene, it's terrifying because you think about it, he's all alone and he's vulnerable, and he's really just trying to do something that I'm pretty sure we all did as kids. One, play with fireworks, but two, just hang out and do something crazy after everybody else go to bed. And, you know, it almost cost him his life. But he does survive. And I mentioned, you know, a couple weeks ago, like, Corey Haim in a motorized wheelchair. Like, could it get any better than that? I don't believe it could.
I think it can. Let me tell you how. What's another movie that involves a child in a wheelchair that also involves something in the monster category? Aliens. You're right. It's Mac and Me. Mac and Me is the greatest film of all time. We have solved it. This show is no longer exists. Thanks for coming, everybody, and we will never see you again because we solved it. Mac and Me is the greatest film of all time.
You know, it only took you, what, 6 episodes, 7 episodes, however many we've done so far, to finally mention Mac and Me. This guy talks about Mac and Me all the time. I truly think that he believes it's the greatest movie of all time.
It is.
Certainly at least one of them. Mac and Me.
I have a shirt of Mac and Me.
I know you do.
Yeah, my girlfriend got it for me.
So nice of her.
No, it's Valentine's Day.
So nice for her. Such a loving gift.
It is. Because it's the greatest film of all time.
I feel like I'm cheapening my scene because I talked about it 2 weeks ago. You know, I don't wanna overdo it with Silver Bullet, but I did say that it was the greatest werewolf movie. Well, I said it was my favorite werewolf movie of all time. So I don't want to do it an injustice, but I also don't want to overdo it, if that makes sense.
What did you say was your the best Marvel movie of all time?
The one that was just Wolfman, the original. Original
you
Wolfman.
Were supposed to say, why don't you go back and listen to the episode? We got to get confused. Come on. If people start with this one, you're just going to, they're like, well, no, I don't have to watch the werewolf one.
Well, they wouldn't be watching it anyway. Anyway.
They wouldn't. See, they would just beg, well, I don't have to listen to it.
Hey, you know, it's late. We're bound to make mistakes. I don't know what you want me to tell you. Let's just continue to move on. And where are we at now? Number 60.
We're at number 60, so we're kind of blowing through this, man, which is good. I like that. We're trying to keep it under 2 hours, unlike our first one.
Right. Yeah, we spent a lot of time talking about the first 10 movie scenes. And not that we want to cheapen it or shorten it or, you know, play down the importance of these scenes in these movies. But we also don't want to bore you guys for 2 hours. Just an hour, hour and 15 minutes, hour and a half, tops.
Yeah, if you guys want to waste an hour and a half on something good, go watch Mac and Me.
All right, enough Mac and Me. Talk about your next scene.
Number 60. Number 60 is actually one that I'm hoping that everybody has seen. Because if you've not seen it, I don't know how to help you. There's definitely something wrong with you. You might want to go to the doctor, because if you haven't seen this film and you're not a baby in terms of like, oh, I don't watch that scary, I'll just listen to these guys talk about it. If that's not you and you haven't seen this film, don't talk to us. Just stop listening. We don't want you as an audience member. We just don't. Take that negativity elsewhere. We don't need that bleak blackness of whatever you may be in negativity in our lives. So number 60, though, continuing on, is actually The Thing. There's a particular, The Thing is a 1989 remake / rehash / reimagining of the 1951 classic titled The Thing from Outer Space, and a sequel to the 2011 prequel of the same name. It's a little confusing. Think of it like Star Wars. The originals were released first, and then the prequels came. Anyhow. But it was directed by John Carpenter, and the writer was John W. Campbell. So, again, The Thing. If you've not seen it, and you don't want to see it, or you've just never seen it, don't have any interest, and you'd rather listen to me talk about it, thanks, I appreciate the view, but after this, I don't want you around anymore. The Thing is actually like, it's a very classic horror film. It's different enough from the original 1951, The Thing from Outer Space, to be technically its own thing. Because while it is a remake / reimagining, I would definitely say it's its own thing for sure, because it spawned so much. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Okay. Good. So if you haven't seen it, go watch it. Pause this and go watch it. This is going to spoil the entire thing. Now, my scene, though, that I'm going to talk about is a speculatory scene. Now, you're probably wondering, what in God's name is a speculatory scene? That makes no sense. Does it happen or does it not? So there's actually all kinds of theories surrounding the movie The Thing. That's one of the things that makes it so great. Kind of like The Shining. There's just so many theories surrounding that film as to what's actually happening, what's actually going on. It's just what makes it great, because it's whatever you want it to be. And that's kind of how this one is, but also not really. Again, it's a speculatory scene, which I don't think it should be speculatory, because there's a lot to unpack here that you can just say, yeah, that's what that is. And anybody who doesn't say, yeah, that's what that is, just needs to leave the show. Anyhow, so the scene that I think was one of the scariest scene in the film, but one of the more scarier scenes in the film that definitely belongs on the top 75 list, it comes at the actually very end of the film, when our boy, Kurt Russell, a.k.a. R.J. McCready, or as I like to call him, McReady, because that's how it's spelled, and he was always ready for everything, is A Lone Survivor with Keith David, who plays Childs, in a little ice cave tavern, because this takes place on Antarctica, and there are a group of researchers who went or sent out to go look for another group of researchers that went missing. That's basically the premise of the film. And it starts with a helicopter and the guy in a helicopter trying to shoot a husky dog. And they roll up on that as he gets out and he's like, Dad, he's trying. Actually, interesting fact about the thing. You know, when he's trying to shoot the dog and he gets out of the helicopter and he's like screaming at them in Russian. I believe it's Russian. Do you know what he's saying to him? To them? He's actually saying something.
I'm not sure.
Like, they didn't tell this guy, like, hey, just start speaking a bunch of stuff that's nonsense in Russian. No one's going to care. Yeah, he's actually saying something that's actually very useful if any of them had actually spoke Russian. He's telling them to stay away from the dog. It's not actually a dog. It's a thing. And no one knows what it is, and it killed all of his crew.
I did not know that.
Yep. So, anyhow, that's basically how this movie starts. But the scene is at the very end when, spoiler alert, Kurt Russell, a.k.a. MacReady, and Childs are the last two left. They're in a little cavern. And keep in mind how they've discovered who is who and who is real and who is not and who is the thing. A couple of things are at play here. Number one, jewelry. The thing cannot replicate jewelry. So if you have an earring, it won't even have an ear hole because it cannot replicate jewelry. And another thing is they would take the blood and they would stick a hot thing, a hot little piece of, what was it, hanger? He would heat up a hanger, part of like a little metal hanger, and stick it in a little vial thing of blood, and it would jump up. And if it jumped up, that's how you knew who was infected. But there's a very subtle moment in the film that not a lot of people catch, but it's also in plain sight to where it's almost like John Carpenter was saying, like, this is what's happening. And it's not like a, were you paying attention? Did you catch that? That's not it at all. So at the end of the film, when they're in this little cavern and the last two left, the camera is on Kurt Russell's character, MacReady. He's breathing. It's Antarctica. They're freezing to death. He's breathing. His breath is wild. And he's drinking. Many speculate he's pretending to drink gasoline, but that's besides the point. He's drinking this, and he looks over at Childs, and he extends his hand. And as Childs is talking and looking at him, you don't see his breath. Why is that? Because he is the thing. And not a lot of people picked up on that for whatever reason. And for me, what makes this scene so scary is, number one, there's only two of you left. Number two, if you're MacReady, either A, you're done, or B, you're assimilated. Now, there is a comic book where he did make it out. He made it out just fine, but so did Childs. And Childs was, in fact, the thing. But what makes this scene so scary is, number two, the look on Kurt Russell's face. He sells it so well. He just has this look of complete contempt. Like, wow, this is it. Like, I've got to get rid of him, and I got to get out of here. And if I don't get rid of him and I don't get out of here, he's going to get rid of me. Or we're both getting out of here, but I'm not going to be me. He just sells it so well, the look on his face. And as a kid, like, even I even knew as a kid, like, that's not Childs. That's not Childs at all. Why is Kurt Russell's breath so rapid and that thick fog breath that you can see in a cold winter day, and Childs has nothing? Even though he's clearly breathing, you can see his chest going up and down, which of course the thing replicates. It doesn't actually breathe. That's the point.
These are all terrifying. How about yourself? Questions.
Like, would you agree at all, or would you just say that there's scarier moments in the film, which we, in a later list, we'll get to?
No, I think this certainly belongs here. I think you're right. This movie definitely could stand on its own, and probably does stand on its own. I think that you're right. I think the child is the thing. I think there's a reason that you don't see the breath. And I think that everybody knows that. Or at least they should know that. I know it. You know it. Now our listeners know it, if they haven't. If they didn't know it before.
But now they know.
Now they know.
Now they know. And if you don't know, why don't you know? We just done told you. Well, I think it's time to go to number 59. You want to take it away?
I can try. So, number 59, we have a movie called Misery. And it stars Kathy Bates, James Caan. I do not have the release date down here because this was actually one that was on your list. So, do you want me to take it, or do you want to continue to do it? I know it's two in a row, but I had one at the end that was two in a row for me too, so I didn't know if you wanted to.
Well, remember last time I did two in a row, so if you want to take this one and the next one, I can get the one after that, since,
well, I mean, it's up to you. My two are at the end. Yeah, we put my two at the end. I don't know. Anyway, it's up to you.
Fine.
It's up to you. I have to admit, it's been a long. I didn't prepare for Misery. Oops, I gave it away. I didn't prepare for Misery because this was one that was that you had picked and that we had picked put on the list. Anyway, long story short, James Caan plays a famous author who Kathy Bates' character is obsessed with, and she so happens to wind up with him inside of her house, and basically she won't let him leave. That's the long and short of it. And the scene, and honestly, and we're going to have this from time to time on our list. This scene is on almost everybody's scariest movie moments list. So this isn't original. Although I do think that some of the movie lists that I've seen, I think we have some different movies, which that's cool. You know, we have different opinions. That's fine. But the scene is the sledgehammer scene in this movie. And, well, number one, Kathy Bates. I find Kathy Bates kind of scary anyway. I don't know why, but I've just always found her, like, even when she's trying to play like a comedic role, like when she was on The Office. Yeah, like when she was on The Office, like she's playing a comedic role, but I don't know. Maybe she's got that face. Kathy Bates, I'm sorry if you happen to listen to the show. I highly doubt it. But if you happen to listen to the show, I mean, no disrespect. I'm just, you know, stating an opinion that your face terrifies me.
That's so rude.
I don't mean that she's ugly or anything like that. I just mean that she's got this look about her that it makes her perfect for this movie, because she's just, and it makes her perfect for every role I think she's ever done, because she's got this personality and this look about her that just screams, hey, I'm going to smash your legs with the sledgehammer. Right? I mean, am I wrong? Do you agree? Do you disagree? I'm not sure. Not sure where I'm going.
Yeah, I agree.
See, you get what I'm saying. Anyway, so basically, to ensure that, that James Caan's character will not leave, he Kathy Bates, she takes a sledgehammer and breaks both of his legs. Now, I have seen, obviously, this movie, but the Family Guy episode where Brian is the James Caan character and Stewie is the Kathy Bates character. And I think the Family Guy episode was more terrifying.
Yeah, they pulled that off very...
Long pause, I'm not serious. But you're right, they actually... There's a few Family Guy episodes where they do these tributes to these movies. They did one to Star Wars. They did one to... They obviously did one to Misery. They did one to... not necessarily a particular movie, but they did one to Patrick Swayze after he passed away, where Peter Griffin went around, you know, roundhouse kicking everybody and just saying Roadhouse afterwards.
I love that episode. It's probably one of my favorite episodes of the
family. It's a great episode. And honestly, like, the tribute, it wasn't in any way, shape, or form disrespectful. It was truly a heartfelt, tribute to Patrick Swayze. And, you know, Roadhouse is one of Patrick Swayze's best movies, in my opinion. Also has Sam Elliott, a great Sam Elliott, which he's great in everything. My dad would disagree. My dad's not a big Sam Elliott fan. Not really sure why. Just not. Anyway.
Call him a loser next time you see him.
You know, he listens to this, so he just heard you call him one. Yeah, anyway, so Dad, I'm sorry.
Sam Elliott. First of all, he was the original ghostwriter in the movie Ghostwriter with Nick Cage, who is by far the greatest actor of all time. So spoiler, I do not like Sam Elliott. Have you seen that man's butt?
This show just took a whole different turn. I'm not sure what's happening. We gotta get back to Misery. So anyway,
that's how I feel recording this. Misery. I'm kidding.
Wow.
No, this is fun. I love it.
I'm not sure if that hurts my feelings or my pride or all of the above.
No, it shouldn't hurt any of it. It should hurt the listeners.
Well, we don't want to hurt the listeners. We like the listeners.
No, it should hurt them into wanting it to not be Misery. And so they're like, we're going to tell all of our friends.
That was a really weird way of saying that. By the way, do I sound stopped up? Because I have to admit to people that I've been dealing with this like sinus thing for the last, I don't know, week and a half. And I feel like
it's been like a month.
It's not been quite that long. But I feel like I sound stopped up. I hope I don't, because if I do, that just ruins everything. But anyway.
I feel like you sound normal. But then again, I've been around you for the last week and a half.
So. Well, that's true. That's true. All right. I mean, if you think I sound normal, then maybe it's all in my head. Anyway, yeah. So we've spent enough time talking about Misery. Basically, you get the gist. She smashes his legs with a sledgehammer, which is ridiculously terrifying.
His ankle goes boom.
It's just she's going to make sure that he does not leave. I've never had a broken bone, knock on wood, but I literally did, knock on wood, just so all of you out there don't freak out. I didn't just say it. But anyway, but I don't know if you ever tried to walk on a broken ankle. I've never had a broken bone, but I imagine that it's not easy. So yeah, and obviously James Caan, great actor, pulls the part off so well, and just like you truly believe that, and maybe Kathy Bates did, maybe she really did smash his ankles. Not really sure.
I'd like to think so, because that reaction of his was genuine.
Well, I mean, you know, there are people who are method actors, so maybe
he might have asked
her. Maybe he was like, "Hey,
those ankles.
Listen, go ahead, just go ahead and break my ankles, smash them." Make sure that that we get this authentic shot. I don't know. Hey, James Caan, Kathy Bates, reach out. This is a shout out. And I would totally flip out if that actually happened. If they were like, yeah, this is the way the scene really went down.
It'd be funny if we didn't get either of them, but instead we got Stephen King.
That would be amazing. Because then I could talk to him about Salem's Lot and Silver Bullet.
I thought you were going to stop it there and be like, Salem's Lot, segue.
Well, you know, I'd probably spend more time talking about Salem's Lot. But, like, anyway, two of my favorite horror movies, as, you know, the listeners would know. Anyway, we're not getting anybody like that on our show by just rambling on. So you want to go ahead and do you want me to do 58 since we're moving on to a scene from Salem's Lot? Or do you want to take a stab at it?
No, it's all yours, man. Like, you've got this. I'll get the next one. And then the next two, we'll figure that out when we get there. We're taking this in stride. This is probably one of the things that we probably should have discussed a little bit more in detail, or I should have understood better what you meant.
It's my fault. It's my fault. I didn't. I mean, you know.
Well, I'll get the last one for sure.
Okay. Well, then that works, because coming up after this, we have two scenes from the same movie. So we'll be able to talk about either scene.
I do have a fun fact about that movie that we have two scenes from that are back to back.
Oh yeah, what's that?
Well, I can't give it away.
Oh, you're not going to give it away yet? I thought you were going to go into it. Anyway, all right. So, speaking of Salem's Lot, that moves us on to number 58. The movie, obviously, Salem's Lot, released November 17th, 1979. It was written by Stephen King, as we already let you know. But interesting fact about this movie, we have a couple doubles on this list. I bet you didn't know that. Not only do we have two scenes from the same movie, we have two different movies directed by the same person. Dun, dun, dun. Did you know that?
I did. I think.
Is that going to be your fun fact?
No, actually, I do have a fun fact about this entire series of 75 movies, like movie moments.
Yeah, go ahead.
Not 75 movies at all, because we have plenty of moments that are from the same film. I will say, without giving anything away, I initially had three moments, maybe four, from the same movie, because that movie's just that good and that scary. But I did whittle it down to just, I think, two. No, three. So I had four. I think I have three.
I can't remember. I think we have three. I won't give the movie away just yet, but
you know which one I'm talking about.
I do know which one you're talking about.
In that particular film, or no, I had three moments from two films. One of those two films had four, and I cut it down to three.
Yes,
it's just that good.
So
continuing on.
No, anyway, but yes. So this movie was directed by Tobe Hooper, who also directed the movie that will be next on our list. Just a little fun fact for you. I actually didn't know that before I was preparing.
Wait, the guy that directed the next movie that's got two moments back to back directed this one as well?
Yes, sir.
Wow, okay.
Right. See, there you go. You learned something tonight.
Fun fact.
It is a fun fact. So, anyway, like I said, Salem's Lot. Again, we talked about this, actually, I guess it was 2 weeks ago, because we didn't do an episode last week. But small town of Salem's Lot being overrun by vampires. So I'll just give you, I won't go too much into the synopsis of the film, but I will tell you that the movie stars David Soul, who plays Ben Mears. David Soul, of course, played Ken Hutchinson on Starsky and Hutch. It also stars Lance Kerwin, who plays Mark Petrie. And these are the two main characters of the movie. although they're not in the scene that I have here. But long story short, Ben Mears, he's a writer. He comes back to his small town to, you know, just to come back home. Mark Petrie is a horror movie buff, kind of like yours truly. And they end up teaming up to save the day, save the town. But the scene that I have on here, it's the look at me scene. And the two people in the scene are Jeffrey Lewis, who plays Mike Ryerson, and Lou Aries, I think is how you say his last name, who plays Jason Burke. The scene, Jeffrey Lewis, who plays Mike Ryerson, he has just become a vampire after being, he was the gravedigger of the town. I explained this last week in our last episode about how he got bitten. And he winds up, this was also what I said was the scariest scene from the film. He winds up in the room and he's sitting there. Lou Ayres played, as Jason Burke, walks into the room and he's just sitting there in this rocking chair, and all you see are these like glowing eyes, and he has this sinister look on his face. And the only thing that Jason Burke has to protect himself happens to be a cross, but he's trying not to look at the vampire that Jeffrey Lewis has become, because he's kind of being hypnotized by him. And in the most sinister voice that he can muster, he's just saying, "Look at me, look at me," and just kind of says it over and over. And just absolutely terrifying scene. Jeffrey Lewis did a phenomenal job in this movie. He's very, very terrifying in this movie. As I mentioned in the last episode, this movie to this day gives me nightmares. I know you'd think that I'd have this movie scene on, higher on the list, but when we're talking about top 75, while this movie scares me to this day, it's probably still not the scariest movie I've ever seen. And so that's why I kind of put this list, this scene where I did on the list. That is Salem's Lot. I'm not going to talk too much more about it because I did discuss it quite a bit in the last episode. But if you want to go ahead and take away number 57.
Yeah, so before I get to number 57, just a fun fact about this movie that has back-to-back moments. The man in this movie is played by Craig T. Nelson, who was in a TV show called Coach. And he played a character named Hayden Fox, and his daughter's name was Kelly. And that's where I got my first and middle name.
I honestly had no idea. You've never told me that before.
See, there you go. Fun fact about this movie, which is, if you haven't guessed it, with Craig T. Nelson in horror films, Poltergeist, the first one. But might I say that honorable mention goes to Poltergeist 3, The Undertaker in that film. He's just creepy.
Yes. Yes. Very.
So Poltergeist is actually a 1982 movie, which we have a lot of movies on here from like 82. I've noticed that, but that's a new series we're going to have to do.
I'm down.
Like, what? Would it be called, like, was blank the best year in movies? And then we just go over, like, I think you've pitched this idea before.
Yeah, we'll
go year by year, yeah.
I'm telling you, the 80s would be hard. The 80s has a lot of great movies. And I mean, I say that being a child of the 80s, but just, I mean, as much as I love movies nowadays, 80s movies have such a nostalgic feel for me, and especially 80s horror movies, because I think the 80s was a huge era for horror films.
It's when all the original stuff was.
Yeah. So
all we have today is remakes or reboots of the 80s horror films.
Pretty much. There's or
like a million sequels.
Yeah, there's very little originality. And don't get me wrong, like I still enjoy new horror movies because I love horror movies, but there's very little originality in the horror movie industry today. So that's just my opinion. Continue, sir.
Okay. So this movie, as I said, stars Craig T. Nelson and Heather O'Rourke. Just a special shout out to her because she did pass away while making these films. She is actually the little girl who this movie moment centers around, actually. So also, did you know that this movie was written and produced and did the screenplay by Steven Spielberg?
I did know that.
See, there you go. You learn something new every day.
No, I said I did know it. Our listeners did.
The listeners learn something new every day.
I have, so like I said, we have scenes back to back. So I have a couple fun facts about Steven Spielberg when we get to my scene.
Okay.
Yeah, Just so you know. Anyway, continue.
So the scene that I'm going to be talking about is a very, very simple scene. It's in the trailer. You see it on AMC every time. It's the countdown to Halloween. But there's just something so eerie about the scene that like you can't help but just really put it on your list because it is truly... It's truly scary, especially as a small child when you watch this for the first time. And it's the scene when the little girl, her character name is blanking me. I just know that her real name is Heather O'Rourke. It's the scene where she's sitting there in front of the TV. I believe it is the static TV, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. She's sitting in front of this. I don't know why, but I was doubting myself. Like, it was not the static TV. There was no way. But it was.
It was.
It was, which is weird because, like, I just watched this movie the other day. But she's sitting in front of that TV and she just looks and turns to her parents and just says, you know, the classic line, they're here. But she doesn't say it just like that. I don't even want to attempt to do it as she does it. But
they're here.
Yeah, just like that. And it just sends a chill down your spine every time you hear it because you just think to yourself, wait a minute, who's here? Like, that's what really, like, kick-starts the movie. Some weird stuff has already been happening up until that point, but really, like, that's what really kick-starts that movie. And for me, it belongs on this list and so high because when you're watching that movie and she says that, like, you... I mean, obviously, it's called Poltergeist, so clearly it's something paranormal, but they're here? Who? Who is they? And, like, you just get a nice little chill down your spine every single time, and people can call this cheesy all that they want, but you have to remember, 1982, there wasn't really anything like this, per se. Sure, we had gotten Halloween, you know, and we had gotten Psycho, and I believe we had gotten, American Werewolf in London. I've already said that before, like that movie on a past episode. So go listen to that. But I believe we'd gotten stuff like that, but nothing. And we've gotten The Exorcist, but it's just one of those things where like, it was still, not to use this word, cause it's very out of context. It was still very taboo to have mini horror films kind of like this, you know? And when you did have it, you weren't used to it. And of course, those people that saw all those old ones wouldn't let their kids go see it. And so when they finally got around to seeing it because they were older and they could, it was just terrifying. Like just this particular scene to me. Now, it's not the most terrifying moment in the film. by any means. That's next. Just a little foreshadowing for you. But that particular moment where she just says, you know, they're here, you really get the sense of dread, like, oh gosh. And she's so excited about it too, which is just creepy.
Well, because they'd already been communicating with her through that was kind of some of the weird things that had been going on. Was that, just so you know, I just looked it up here, and her character name in the movie, where'd it go? I just lost it. It's Carol Ann Freeling.
Yeah, I knew it was something, and I knew it was a should be hyphenated name.
Yes.
You ready to get to the next one?
Same sure. Film? Sure. Let's go ahead. Let's just go ahead and do it.
Pound it out, buddy.
So I have a couple fun facts about this movie. So we're still talking Poltergeist, but we have a different scene. But here's a couple interesting facts that you may not know. Now, it's not like I called up Steven Spielberg and was like, hey, can I have some interesting facts? I honestly got these from IMDb, but I thought I'd share them with you in case you have never looked them up. Anyway, so there's a couple things in the movie that were put in the movie because Steven Spielberg is truly afraid of them, or at least was when he was a child. One of them pertains to the scene that we're talking about, which is clowns. The other was a tree that was outside his window when he was a kid. So that's kind of interesting. Fun fact number two. This idea for Poltergeist came from a failed attempt to do a sequel to Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which was also a Spielberg film. So that was kind of interesting. That was kind of interesting. I didn't know that at all, but I found that out. And number three, Drew Barrymore actually read for or auditioned for the role of Carol Ann Freeling, but Heather O'Rourke got it because they wanted somebody who was a little more sweet and angelic. But because of Drew Barrymore's reading and audition for this scene, it's the reason that she got the movie E.T. So Spielberg liked her, wanted her for one of his movies, just not this one. So that's a little fun trivia for you. Now, as I mentioned before, this movie was also directed by Tobe Hooper. So we have that double going for you. And the scene that I'm going to talk about is the clown scene. Now, I've known people all my life who are afraid of clowns, like deathly terrified of clowns. And a lot of people was because they've seen the movie It or, you know, various other reasons. I've never had a fear of clowns. I grew up, my mom collects clowns. There were clown paintings and clown figurines and clown decorations all around my house. Never had a problem with clowns. But if I had this clown, this particular clown, it would absolutely freak me out. So in this scene, Robbie Freeling, who is played by Oliver Robbins, is laying in his bed, and there's a clown at the, you know, his clown doll is at the end of his bed, and he thinks he hears something. And he looks up, and the clown just kind of looks like it's staring at him. You know, no big deal, whatever. He lays back down, not thinking anything about it. And
once, I don't want to cut you off, but one second here. I don't know if you guys just heard that in the background, but as we're talking about a movie that is called Poltergeist, literally right in front of me, I have an extended hard drive, Seagate. So it's a little, it's like 6 inches long. For my PlayStation 4, and I keep it resting on top of my PlayStation 4, and it's actually thin enough to slide in between my TV and my PlayStation, but it's also thick enough to where when you slide it in there, it doesn't move. it got pushed out from behind, and it just fell. Like, that's what that noise was.
That's creepy.
So, by all means, continue. But that was what a coinky doink.
Maybe we should stop talking about it. Things are happening. Scary things are happening. Anyway, so the clown scene. I'm gonna continue talking about it.
You're fine. I just thought that was really, really strange.
I was watching
it as it happened. I was like, oh man, that's.
I agree. Super weird. So, if you happen to get sucked into a TV, it's been really fun. I won't be there to rescue you. So, it's been really fun doing the show with you. I hope you know that.
Yeah, it's been fun, man. Tell my mother I always hated her.
That's a topic for a different podcast. Anyway, so we have like opened some emotional wounds and just all kinds of can of worms, all kinds of stuff going on here tonight on this episode. It's been real. My heart is pounding. My emotions are on edge. The hair on the back of my neck is standing up. I'm freaking out. That's not completely true, but it sounded good. So anyway, the clown. Back to the clown. What does the clown do? I forgot about the clown. No, so he's completely, like, he thinks he's hearing things, and he ends up throwing a jacket or a blanket over the clown, and he tries to lay back down. He hears something again. He raises up. The clown ain't there. It's not sitting in the chair where it was just at. He decides he's going to look under his bed. Would not be my first option. My first option would be to get the heck out of there. But he decides he's going to look under his bed. So he looks under his bed. The clown's not there under his bed. When he raises up, the clown is there behind him. And this clown is as alive as can be. Excuse me. This clown is as alive as can be. And he grabs him. He's got these long arms. He wraps him around. And he ends up pulling him under the bed. Now, nothing bad really happens here. The boy gets away. But this scene, absolutely 100% terrifying. I mean, just imagine if you were laying there and all of a sudden you start hearing noises and something like a horror version of Toy Story begins to take place and these, you know, your dolls just up and started attacking you. It'd be pretty intense. It'd be pretty terrifying. It'd be game on. I'd be like fighting them off, but it would be completely terrifying. And that, after 35 minutes, is the clown scene from Poltergeist.
That was kind of my fault it took so long. I just feel like I had to share.
I know. We're good. We're still under 2 hours. We're good.
Yeah, that's good. We're under 2 hours. We're gonna keep trying to get this still under 2 hours. And before I go on to the next one, I just want to say, if you guys have been hearing like weird noises in the background, just that one time was the funky thing. This whole show, I've been trying really hard to like get used to this brand new mic setup. So that's probably why we sound a little different. As you guys know, Nathan's had a new mic for about, what, two episodes now? One or two?
Yeah, this is the second episode.
Mm-hmm. And this is my first one with this new one. And so I'm just getting used to it. I know I've got to buy a headphone splitter because right now, I actually don't have Nathan's audio coming through my headphones. They're still through the phone because the headphones are going to pick up like me. I can hear myself when I talk into my headphones, but I have to hear it so I can kind of make sure my volume's okay and also make sure that you can't really hear a whole lot of stuff in the background, which I've been hearing here and there. But, you know, just in case, again, we're still working on this. This whole show is still a work in progress. We're, what, 6-7 episodes in now? So just bear with us. We're only going to keep getting better. I know we have been getting better. So, you know, just we're getting there. Just wanted to throw that out there. We're trying.
Can I say something real quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
I just had a feel good moment because you said that if you wore, you know, the headphones that you couldn't hear me. So what I heard was that hearing me is an essential part of the show. Makes me feel good.
Yeah.
Makes me feel good. And I honestly, I can say the same about you. If I couldn't hear you,
I appreciate that.
Yeah. If I couldn't hear you, what would I have? It would just be me. Like, it would be some very weird conversations if, like, I was the only one, you know, saying these things. It'd be super weird, and probably nobody would listen. So I'm glad, you know, I'm glad we found each other.
This same. As am I. Likewise.
Just so you know, Hayden, I'm a happily married man. Don't get any ideas.
I've been actually this month, come the 31st, I will have been, well, obviously still am, but like the 31st of this month will be my 5-year anniversary with my girlfriend. So, you know.
That's exciting.
Likewise here.
It's exciting. Anyway, move on to the next scene before people quit listening.
Yeah, I should probably do that, shouldn't I?
It's fine. No, actually, that part I didn't know. I was just, you know, for the sake of our listeners.
So anyhow, our last scene and scariest movie moment that belongs on this list today is actually from a movie that, it's the same situation with a thing. If you don't know it, what are you doing with your life? Now, I will say this, though. It's very controversial. A lot of people love this movie. A lot of people hate this movie. But it's actually a scene from a little movie that you may or may not know called The Blair Witch. Now, I do believe we've talked about this movie before.
I think we've made reference to it, yes.
I believe we have made reference to it. But this movie came out in 1999. And this is not the first found footage film by any means, but it's a found footage film that was so popular and so polarizing, it actually kicked off the found footage craze. Now, the scene that we're going to be talking about with this film is actually the very last scene. It's actually not even a scene. It's more or less the last snippet of the film. Would you agree? It is the last shot of the film, but it's not even really a scene.
Yeah, it's
a literal movie moment.
The whole, I guess if you include the whole, you know, 3 minutes or so leading up to it, then it could be considered a scene. But the scary part itself is only about, what, 20 seconds or so?
20 seconds of rolling footage.
Yeah.
Yep. And it is, if you don't know by now, it is the corner scene of the film. It's the last shot of the film. It's when she walks downstairs and there he is. One of her friends, because there's three of them that she's been looking for this whole time. Is it Mike?
Yes.
Yes. Mike.
It's Mike. Josh had already gone missing by this point.
Yeah.
That was who they were looking for, is Josh.
Yeah, they were looking for Josh. And it was her and Mike looking for Josh. And then Mike just disappears. And she's fumbling around looking for him and Josh as well. Not knowing what's going on. You can't see anything. You almost feel claustrophobic and you feel anxiety ridden. And then the last shot of the film as she looks over is Mike in the corner, just standing there.
Facing the wall like he's in timeout.
Yeah, facing the wall like he's in timeout. And he, like, you can't see his face. So you don't know what's going on. There's the unknown aspect of it that makes it terrifying. But the other aspect of it that makes it terrifying is how well this actress is doing her job in selling it. It feels real. That was the whole problem with this film. The director had to come out and make the actress and the actors come back into the real world, basically, and be like, no, like, we're still alive. So people would not freak out and constantly report this that they saw a snuff film.
Didn't the lead actress end up, like, before, like, they were supposed to make it seem real? I may be wrong about this. I'm just, this is what I remember from when this movie came out. And I didn't look this up or anything, but they wanted people to believe that it was real. And they kind of had like a no, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, like a no acting clause for a little while.
Yes. But
the lead actress actually did a Steak and Shake commercial.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically they had a deal where they wouldn't do anything for a while. They couldn't really talk to people just for a little while. And people believed it was real. And so they were like, okay, you guys can break it. It's all right. Just tell them you're not dead. Because the guy was going to get in trouble.
It's certainly... I remember when this movie came out, seeing previews for it and thinking, holy cow, this is scary. This is real. You know, it looks real. It's found footage. But it's just shot that way. I was young and naive. I was 14 when this. Wow, I'm old.
But you know, like that's what makes the scene scary. Is she walks down there? You, as the viewer, you have no idea what the hell's going on the whole time, like at all. And then you just see Mike in the corner, and you're like, "Well, what is he doing in the corner?" And obviously, she knows what's going on, or she's at least just as confused as we are because her blood-curdling screaming out his name is chilling. And then she drops the camera while it's still on him. You can't hear her, but you can, and she's just screaming.
Yeah, you like kind of can't
hear her as if she's right there, so clearly she's somewhere, but she's just screaming, and then the movie just cuts to black, and that's it.
You kind of get the sense that whatever happened to him is happening to her at that moment, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you don't
find out. Oh, go ahead.
You don't see that in this scene, but you do get the sense that they both met their demise.
Mm-hmm.
And judging by the fact that, you know, this is found footage, obviously she didn't take it back and like, hey, look what happened to me.
She wasn't waving around showing everybody.
Exactly.
And I will say, you do find out in what I'm calling the second one, because the Book of Shadows, I'm not acknowledging that one, is awful.
Nobody does.
We're going to have to do a list of the top 10 worst horror sequels of all time. But the what I'm considering the second one, the 2016 one, you actually find out why they had to face the corner. But, you know, a whole 17 years before that, you didn't know. You didn't know what was going on. And it was terrifying to see that, because as a kid like yourself, you were impressionable. I was very, very young when I saw this. I was very impressionable. I thought it was real. And I'm like, what am I watching? And it was, and to just sit there and be like, that's how it ends? Like, what happened? Like, it was the unknown.
Now, kid.
They were messing with things that they don't understand, and people always fear what they don't understand.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's, I mean, even that goes for anything, not just horror stuff or horror movies. That goes for life itself. Mm-hmm. But I want to admit something. This was one of the scenes that I added to the list because I truly find this scene terrifying. Although, I'm going to admit this, don't hate me, Blair Witch Project is not one of my favorite movies. This scene, and to be honest, I'm not a huge fan of the whole found footage. I'm not even really sure what it is about it. It's just not my cup of tea. But this scene was scary enough, and it was the scene from the movie that stuck with me the most. But it's definitely belongs on this list, even though it's not
your cup of tea.
It's not my cup of tea. Like I've seen the movie a couple times, and that's good. Now, I did go back while preparing for this episode, I did go back and rewatch the scene, and it is still as terrifying as the first time that I watched it. So
it's not your morning brew.
So that, yeah, no, that would be a little Maxwell House K cup with a little bit of Almond Joy creamer. I've mentioned that before.
Yeah, yeah, I think you did. I see. I go for the when I'm not drinking decaf because I caffeinate myself enough as it is.
You don't need it.
Yeah, exactly. I always go for the Green Mountain, the Dark Magic, because it's like super dark. Or the I haven't had it in a little bit because it's just so. I think it's like $15 for an 8-pack. The Death Wish coffee.
I think mine's the breakfast blend, something like that. I don't remember which one I bought this last time. I just know I pop it in there, little bottle of water to fill it up, and I'm good to go. So I'm the only one in my house that drinks coffee.
Really?
Yeah.
My wife. Like, I have a Keurig in my room because of that. Like, I keep it in my room.
No, my wife does not like coffee. Now, I do have to say that my kids will drink it, but I try not to let them have it because they're little and, well, they don't need it. I don't need it.
It'll stunt their growth.
I
don't know if that's real or not.
I don't think it's real. Although, you know, I'm only like 5'10", and I drank coffee as a kid, so maybe it's true. Maybe I'd have been 7 foot tall. But I was actually always told as a kid that if I drank coffee, it would turn my feet black. I don't know if you've ever heard that from anybody else. But that's what I was always told. And I have to say...
Feet black?
Yeah, it would turn my feet black, yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah, I was a little kid. I kind of believed it. But I can say I've drank coffee pretty much all my life. Never happened. My feet never turned black. So that's a lie, if anybody ever tells you that.
Well, that is definitely good to know.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I've been drinking coffee since very young, and my feet haven't turned black yet, so we're good.
Yeah, good, good, good to know. So that's two out of two people that it didn't happen to. So,
but I am very short. I'm 5'8", so.
Are you 5'8"? Am I taller than you?
Yeah, I'm 5'8".
Wow. Maybe I just never noticed, because, like, your hair is usually, like, combed back and it kind of puffs up.
Yeah.
So maybe you just seem taller.
Yeah, I think I'm legally a midget.
No, that's...
because of how tall everybody else around me is.
You have to be 5'1" or shorter, I believe. It may be under 5 foot, but I think it's under 5 foot. I don't know. I'm not an expert on growth charts. I'm not really an expert on anything. I don't think I'm not even an expert on movies or podcasting. I'm just a guy having fun. Did we do it? Did we count down 10 scenes?
I think that's it. This is what I'll consider the part of the show where we just ramble on.
Yes.
But yes. We did it.
I'm proud of us. I'm proud of us.
As am I.
And we're still under 2 hours. So
even if barely.
Better than last time.
God, last time was bad.
We did go a long time. But it's okay. It's okay. I felt like we maybe spent a little too much time on each scene. So we kind of shortened it up this time. And I had a better script outline written, even though we didn't really script it. I scripted an outline so I could keep it shorter. And I think we did it.
I think that's it.
I think we might have killed this episode. I don't know.
We might have O.J. Simpson this episode, yeah.
Can't say that. He was found not guilty.
We might have Michael Vick'd this episode as if it was a dog in a dog fight.
Just give it up. It's fine.
Okay. That's... We might have, if we had Infinity Stones, we might have snapped this episode.
Careful, some people out there haven't seen those movies, i.e. my father, right, who I've tried to get to catch up on the Marvel movies. He's watched all the Marvel films, but has not seen... I know for a fact he hasn't seen the last two. Not sure.
So nothing bad happens.
Yeah, don't spoil it.
No, nothing bad happens.
Anyway, this has been fun. I was super bummed about missing last week, so
we're actually held me at gunpoint to do this. I'm kidding. Yeah. I held myself.
We're actually gonna do two episodes this week. I think
you guys should feel lucky.
I think we're gonna try. So we're kind of making up for last week, and then we're gonna maybe record here again in a couple nights. Don't know. Are we going to release the episodes on the same day, or are we going to just throw this one out there now?
Well, this one, as soon as we're done with it, yeah, I'm just going to put it out once I edit, like, the timestamp at the beginning, yeah.
Okay, well then, yeah. So maybe look forward to an episode being released now, and then one being released on Thursday as normal. That's pretty cool.
Unless, of course, you're listening to this episode in the future when we have, like, 100 episodes, then don't bother.
Well, then I would have already said this, and never mind. I'm not going there. I can't do it. It's too much of a rabbit hole. Not doing it.
It really is. Well, I think that's going to do it for us, you guys.
Yeah.
That's it. We're going to try to get it under 100 minutes.
Hey,
go to. So here we go. Thank you all for listening very, very much. Shout out to those listeners in those other countries. Again, that is Canada, Ireland, and Germany. You guys rock. We don't have any listeners on other planets, though, so I'm a little disappointed. Mercury, where you at? Step your game up. People, tell everyone on Mercury to watch it.
Come on, Neptune.
Also, be kind to yourself, be kind to others, and keep mainlining movies. Have a good one, everybody.